There, do you have any idea what you're listening to?
London Philharmonic?
It's Venus.
Huh?
Venus.
Why not? We bounced signals off the moon's surface. There's no reason that Venus shouldn't radiate impulses.
I don't mean the static. Can't you hear it, the other thing?
What other thing?
Listen to it, Paul. Listen to the voice.
Hello and welcome to Media Geek. This is your weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. My name is Paul Riesman-Ellen. I'm your host. On today's program, former FCCers line up against indecency regs and the first pirate broadcast in China since 1949. You will want to stay tuned. Last month, I discussed the pending Supreme Court review of the FCC's indecency standards with Matthew Lassar. Now, even more parties are lining up in opposition to the commission's recent fines for fleeting F-bombs and naked buttocks. Recently, a group of former FCC commissioners and staffers went on record criticizing the current indecency regime. Former Democratic Chairman Newton Minow is most known for calling television a vast wasteland back in the 1960s. Yet he thinks that broadcasters should face fewer restrictions over content. Joining him in filing a brief to the court is former Republican Chairman Mark Fowler, who once famously called television a toaster with pictures. Together, they call the FCC's recent indecency fines a, quote, Victorian crusade, end quote. Their comments urge adherence to the First Amendment, observing that indecency regulations, quote, began as a limited tool for reining in a small number of provocative personalities and irresponsible licensees, and have become a rallying cry, though, for revival of 19th century Comstockery, end quote. They're referencing Anthony Comstock, the man who in the late 19th century influenced the Congress to pass the Comstock Law, which made illegal the delivery of obscene, lewd, or lascivious material, and also made illegal information about birth control. Their filing doesn't only take aim at fleeting expletives, but also urges the court to get the FCC out of the business of regulating indecency altogether, observing that, quote, it is time for the court to bring its view of the electronic media into alignment with contemporary technological and social reality, end quote. Joined in their comments by other former FCC commissioners and staffers, Minow and Fowler conclude, quote, as former regulators, we appreciate that the FCC is in an uncomfortable position, buffeted by the turbulent passions of anxious parents and threats from excited congressmen, but that is precisely why the matter must be taken out of the agency's hands entirely, end quote. Such strong words from former commissioners and staffers, Republican and Democrat, give cause for worry amongst many in the public interest community who are concerned that it's a slippery slope from an FCC with weakened indecency enforcement powers to an FCC with overall weakened enforcement powers. In their filings with the court, the major broadcast networks have called into question the fundamental case law, Red Lion v. FCC, which solidified the FCC's ability to regulate broadcast media content. While the former commissioners do not attack Red Lion directly, they do argue that pressures from the internet, satellite, and other media necessitate treating broadcasts differently than 40 years ago, an argument very much in line with attacks being taken by the networks. And yet, it's not just former FCC commissioners and the networks lining up in opposition to the FCC's indecency policy. Recently joining them are the ACLU, the Directors Guild of America, and the American Federation of Television and Radio Artists. They tell the Supreme Court that the FCC should be out of the indecency regulation business altogether, saying, quote, no agency should be given such power under the Constitution, end quote. These groups also appeal to the technological changes of the last 31 years since Pacifica v. FCC, which is the Supreme Court decision which solidified the FCC's ability to regulate indecency. They argue that, quote, the rationale for censorship of non-obscene broadcasting has lost whatever persuasive force it once may have had. Given cable television, the internet, and other electronic media today, broadcasting is no longer, quote, uniquely pervasive and uniquely accessible to children, end quote. However, these groups make pains not to advocate for the total degradation of the FCC's regulatory powers, noting that there is a difference between, quote, structural rules designed to promote more speech, end quote, and, quote, censorship rules based on broad, shifting, and culturally driven criteria, such as patent offensiveness, end quote. The Supreme Court is due to take up the challenge to the FCC's indecency regime this fall. And a federal appeals court has paved the way for greater legal recognition of free software in Creative Commons style licenses. Now, this is a topic I've covered quite a bit in the past on MediaGeek, but really haven't mentioned recently. In the last 30 years, commensurate with the rise of the personal computer and the internet, there's been a new approach to copyright and intellectual property, which attempts to allow authors and creators to carefully control the rights to their creations while also granting users specific rights to copy, modify, and reuse their work, provided certain guidelines are followed. The movement has come to be called copyleft because it involves creators giving away more rights and being more permissive than straight copyright makes room for. However, one of the biggest challenges facing copyright is that the concept and its various iterations have yet to be truly tested in court. An August 13th ruling by the D.C. Circuit of Appeals helps to bolster the validity of copyleft licenses. The court ruled that just because a software programmer chooses to give away his work for free doesn't mean that it still doesn't enjoy protection under copyright. The case in question involves a program called the Java Model Railroad Interface, a popular application used by model railroad enthusiasts. The application was released under a license which allows the free duplication, modification, and use of the software provided certain conditions are met, such as crediting the original author and distributing the original source code. A company called Camond Associates took the Model Railroad Interface program and stripped out identifying copyright information and redistributed the program without the author's approval. Now, a lower court ruled that Camond Associates did indeed violate the contractual terms specified by the software's license, but determined that copyright had not been violated. This ruling was distressing for free software advocates because contract disputes typically result in monetary damages, which are difficult to assess for software that is otherwise given away for free. Their worry was that the punishment for violating the author's rights would be so small as to render copyleft licenses virtually useless. However, the D.C. Circuit's decision that violating copyleft license terms constitutes copyright violation serves as a stiff deterrent for unscrupulous companies to improperly appropriate free software for profit without adhering to the license terms. In its ruling, the court wrote, quote, "There are substantial benefits, including economic benefits, to the creation and distribution of copyrighted works under public licenses that range far beyond traditional license royalties," end quote. Copyleft license terms have been fundamental in the development of open source software, which has evolved into a multi-billion dollar business, in addition to evolved into a multi-million user movement. The most prominent example of copyleft software is the Linux operating system, which is responsible for running millions of internet research and even military applications worldwide. Software like Linux has become so prominent and robust because its license terms give users the right to openly modify, refine, and distribute the software, but they may only share and profit from it if they also share their contributions. This idea has now been spread to cultural works like music, photos, video, and other art through the Creative Commons movement, which seeks to provide a menu of simple, easily understood licenses for authors to choose in order to carefully give others the right to copy, modify, or redistribute their work in precisely the fashion they are most comfortable with. This allows people to reappropriate things, to create collage art, to sample, and do a lot of things which artists have believed that traditional copyright really interferes with now, making it difficult to engage in documentary, to engage in criticism, collage, even new forms of music. Now, in fact, this here radio show, the Media Geek Radio Show, is distributed under a Creative Commons non-commercial share-alike license. This means that I permit anyone to freely copy, excerpt, or modify this radio program, which you can download online, but only do so provided that any new work that arises from this process is also released under the same license. That means you let someone else go ahead and copy, excerpt, or modify whatever you do, and is also done for non-commercial purposes. This is a non-commercial program for non-commercial radio. I make no money at it, and I ask that you not either, at least not without my permission. So this means that if you want to do something with a show, you have to let others do the same with whatever you make, and you're not going to profit from it. It's my show, and I dictate those terms. So as a user of a copyleft license, the DC Circuit Court decision is good news, reassuring me that I can still own and control my creative work, even if I'm willing to allow anyone greater freedom to edit, manipulate, or copy it than traditional copyright would otherwise permit. Now on the unlicensed radio front, the International Journalists' Rights Organization, Reporters Without Borders, claims to have made the first pirate radio broadcast in China since the communists took power in 1949. The Beijing transmission on 104.4 FM was made as part of a protest against China's ongoing suppression of free speech, in addition to its failure to follow through with promises to loosen these restrictions commensurate with the Olympic Games. The 20-minute program was broadcast in English, French, and Mandarin. And here's a portion of the English language broadcast.
Welcome to Radio Without Borders, the only free radio station in Beijing. This radio station was created by the press freedom organization Reporters Without Borders to inform you about freedom of expression in China. Reporters Without Borders Secretary General Robert Ménard will tell us about the purpose of this radio station.
China is the country of censorship, and this program is our way of making fun of the Chinese authorities who still keep hundreds of journalists and internet users in prison. It's our way of saying to them, despite everything you do, here are the voices of people you want to silence, and they're speaking in the heart of Beijing on the very first day of the Olympics. It's our way of saying, whatever measures you take, you will never be able to abolish the right to free speech.
Seven years ago, the Chinese authorities used many very persuasive and seductive arguments to obtain the 2008 Olympic Games for Beijing. One of the promises was total freedom of the press before and during the Olympics. This promise was made in 2001 in Moscow by Wang Wei of the Beijing Organizing Committee for the Games. The promise was never kept. 7 years later, the propaganda department continues to censor the Chinese media, particularly reports about sensitive issues such as corruption, street demonstrations, the situation in Tibet, or human rights violations. In this terrible context for freedom of speech, Chinese journalists got used to self-censorship, as He Qingyan, a former Chinese journalist who nowadays lives in the US, explains to us.
People who work in the media in China are tested for 1 year when they join a news organization. They are well aware of what they are allowed to say and what they are not allowed to say, and they know that if they don't comply, they will be fired.
Foreign correspondents are also under very tight control during this period, as another former journalist explains to us.
Media censorship has been getting worse and worse during the Olympic period. The Chinese government said foreign journalists would be free to come to China and do interviews during the Olympic period. But in reality, there are many exceptions. Foreign journalists cannot go to places such as Tibet or Xinjiang and interview freely there.
Television and radio stations are censored even more than the print media. When CCTV's journalists arrive at work in the morning, a notice in their work computers tells them which subjects must not be covered and which must be covered with care. International radio stations such as the BBC are jammed.
防止是 bbcchinese.com.
Anyone who criticizes the Chinese government's failure to keep its promises is put in prison or subjected to intimidation. There are a lot of these cases. Human rights activist Yang Chulin was sentenced to 5 years in prison and 2 years of privation of civil rights after publishing an open letter in which he said, "We want human rights and not the Olympics." Pro-democracy activist Chang Wenhe was interned by force in a psychiatric hospital after holding up a sign on the roads in Beijing saying, "We want human rights and democracy instead of fascist Olympics." Chang Minfang, a human rights activist from the city Tianjin, was sentenced to 2 years of re-education in a work camp after writing an open letter to Hu Jia. And the most famous activist, Hu Jia, will spend the Olympics in Shaobei prison in Tianjin because he published 5 articles on the internet and gave 2 interviews to the foreign press. He was sentenced to 3.5 years in prison. All these prisoners are kept in very bad conditions. Yang Qianli is a former political prisoner who now lives in the United States. He was arrested in the course of an investigation on worker strikes in northern China in April 2002. He was released 5 years later. He tells us about the conditions he had to endure in prison.
They are very harsh and cruel, especially with prisoners who have just entered the prison. They harass you physically or mentally and make you submit. You are left alone in your cell for the first 15 months. You cannot read books, you cannot receive news from abroad, you cannot talk to people, you can just walk to and fro in a tiny cell all day long. You have to sit and stand still for 4 hours. That is what we are reduced to during the first 15 months.
Thanks to international pressure, he was finally released.
When I was in prison, the conditions in which I was detained became slightly better because of international pressure. I'd like to deliver a message through this program to say that pressure from the outside is very important to people in prison. By using pressure, the conditions for our friends detained in China at the moment will get a little better.
Overseas Chinese websites that post reports from journalists in China have also been victim of a harsh crackdown. At least 10 of the contributors to Bushun, a news website created by the Chinese dissidents in exile, are currently in prison. Wei Shi, this website's director, tells us how things are for his contributors in China.
Their economic situation is not very good. They don't have a salary. They work in secret. Some of them are peasants whose farms have been taken away. The toughest thing for them is that if they are discovered and if the police find out that they write for Bushun, they could very easily be arrested. Most of the people writing for us are not happy with the way things are in China. They hope that with these articles, they can help China to develop in a better way, a more equal way.
A total of 30 journalists and 51 cyber dissidents were in prison at the start of the year. China has more journalists in prison than any other country in the world. Reporters Without Borders calls on the Chinese authorities to stop censoring the news media and to free all political prisoners.
Libérer des gens qui ne sont détenus que.
Firstly, you must free people who are being held just because they think differently from you. About 100 people, including journalists, cyber dissidents, and human rights activists, are currently in your prisons. Secondly, stop jamming international radio stations. Stop jamming programs just because they allow people you don't like to speak on the air. Stop spying on internet users, as you have been doing for years with tens of thousands of internet police. These are some of the demands of Reporters Without Borders. International organizations must be able to work freely in China. Foreign correspondents must be allowed to report freely, not only during the Olympics, but before and afterwards as well. You didn't let us come to Beijing. You kept us out of China. But despite everything, here we are. We're being heard, peacefully, and without any violence. As I said, for us, this is a way of saying censorship does not work.
That was a portion of a clandestine radio broadcast made by Reporters Without Borders in Beijing, China, on August 8th, in protest against that country's ongoing suppression of free speech and persecution of reporters who dare to speak freely. And you are listening to Media Geek. You can check out Media Geek online at MediaGeek.net. That's the location of the Media Geek blog. And you get the program at radio.mediageek.net, where you can download the MP3, you can subscribe to the podcast and get it automatically downloaded to your computer and MP3 player, or you can listen right there in your browser. It's all there at mediageek.net. And if you have any comments about the program, I'd love to hear them. Send them to me, paul@mediageek.net. And hey, if you want to get sort of more frequent but far less verbose updates from me, and you use Twitter, just go to twitter.com/MediaGeek and get my 140 character missives from all over the place. And now for something completely different.
You look like you're just the ripe age to be drafted. Which would you rather sacrifice, your hot car or your life? Die for oil, sucker.
He said we're headed for war in Iraq. I don't know why you say that. I hope we're not headed to war in Iraq.
Born on the firecracker 4th of July. Raised on football and MTV. Never felt what it's like to have to fight to stay free. Vietnam, just a time life book memory. The mask is off again, this time nobody cares. But you can't keep dancing when your legs are blown away. Die for oil, sucker. Can get your face shot off so arms race tycoons won't have to get a real job. The Cold War's over, it was all a mirage. We could use that money, we got problems to solve. But we're not allowed a chance at the peace dividend because our psycho president's got his head in the sand. What kind of a Bush League double cross is this? Cheap oil? The price has already gone up. Die for oil, sucker. Sucker.
It's the ultimate rush. Because you know you're going into the fight to begin with. And then you got a good song playing in the background. That gets you real fired up. Ready to do the job.
You two can get your spinal cord snapped to save greedy kings from the greed of Iraq. And they're sitting on something we can learn to live without, but certain fat cats' bank accounts cannot. Oil. Die for oil, sucker. For this, you get to be all you can be. A dead Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines.
Win the hearts and minds of the people. That's our job. We have to bring the ideal of democracy and freedom to the country.
Once we take over that place, we'll never, ever be able to leave. Somehow we think we're gonna waltz right in to colonize their hearts and minds.
But the Arab people are now so damn mad, we'll be lucky to get out of there alive.
Major combat operations in Iraq have ended. In the Battle of Iraq, the United States and our allies have prevailed. Bring them on.
Because America the Beautiful is going to hell. We no longer make cars or TVs very well. Our economy's rigged on selling guns and making war. What happens when no one wants our products anymore? America the Powerful has hit a decline. Our cities and our people are falling apart. Got one thing left to sell. That's the World Police. A mercenary state to ensure there's no peace.
Bring them on.
In the fields of bodies burning.
Bring them on.
As the war machine keeps turning.
Bring them on. Bring them on.
Poisoning their brainwashed mind.
Bring them on.
Oh, Lord, you're
bringing them on.
I'm a war president. I make decisions here in the Oval Office and foreign policy matters with war on my mind.
It's about the 23 million people of Iraq and bringing them freedom. And that's what we're really here to do.
The targeting capabilities and the care that goes into targeting is as impressive as anything anyone could see.
Got him. Good. Second one. Hit the other one.
This was a lot more real and true than just a video game. A lot of people thought it was just me. Oh, yeah, look through the sight and shoot. No. A lot of this is face-to-face, and especially riding by after some of the bombs have went off and seeing all the people on the side of the road bloated up and just all the smells around you. I mean, from the people lying dead, rotted, and it's a lot more gruesome than you think.
Die for oil, sucker. The unmistakable voice of Jello Biafra. Collaged together in a piece called Oil Pigs, brought to us by Skidmark Bob, who hosts Pop Defect Radio on Freak Radio Santa Cruz. You can hear more from Skidmark at popdefectradio.blogspot.com. If you want a bigger dose of audio collage and truthful translations, check out the mother of all archives at diymedia.net. And that brings to a close this edition of Media Geek. I'll be back in one more week with more news and views on our media environment. In the meantime, go to the Media Geek website at mediageek.net. Of course, you can get the radio program at radio.mediageek.net. You can download the MP3. You can listen to the podcast or listen right there in your browser, all at radio.mediageek.net. And Media Geek is heard on great community radio stations all around North America. A couple of those are WBCR in Great Barrington, Massachusetts, and WVEW in the wonderful city of Brattleboro, Vermont. And Media Geek got its start at Community Radio WEFT in Champaign, Illinois. And this program is available to any non-commercial station that wants to air it. I only ask that maybe you drop me a line and let me know that you're playing it. Send it to paul@mediageek.net. Thanks for tuning in.